I know Dills isn't coming in because she's got that flu that's going around, so I'm sure there are others in that situation as well. You had it last week, right? You crazy kids and your damn plague. Fredo's back today. Aaron's back. And Cameron. Alright, 1954, the Indochinese War comes to an end. Gohan Diem is appointed by Bo Dai to be the Prime Minister. But Bo Dai essentially launches an internal coup of sorts. You're Matt, right? And would topple the monarchy and seize power for himself. He would take advantage of the fact, as we said last class, that the French soldiers would stay until 1956, and the CIA was there. But he also was lucky in the fact that, well, there was a lot of bad things going on in the North that we're going to talk about. But ultimately, Diem and his family, even though they were corrupt and incompetent, basically managed to stay in power, to keep things stable. But by 1957, 1958, the people of the state of Vietnam were losing patience with Diem. And soon there was a, not a big uprising, but a wave of discontent. In the cities, people were getting tired of the president's repressive measures. They were sick and tired of the army essentially being the police, and the police driving down the streets in armored cars. They were sick and tired of there being no such thing that we would call like due process of law, where if you were suspected of being an enemy of the state, you could basically be seized. And in the countryside, where there was no control, the Viet Minh came back, and they began to organize the peasants. So the dynamic that resulted in the downfall of the French was reappearing in South Vietnam. The state had control of the urban centers, the countryside was controlled by the Viet Minh. And once the peasants were trained, they started engaging in guerrilla tactics. They assassinated local government officials, agents of Diem. They would also ambush units of the ARVN if they went too far out into the countryside. So it was a weird dynamic, what was going on. But, long story short, the majority of people in South Vietnam, both in the city and the countryside, did not like their leader. Now, to try to crush these insurgents, the South Vietnamese government would label them Viet Dieng Cong San, which of course the bold is how they would be referred to in America, the Viet Cong. Viet Nghiêng Cong San is Vietnamese for communist traitor in Vietnam. But our American GIs would refer to the Viet Cong, the communist Vietnamese, as VC. Victor Charlie. The bad guys. Well, interestingly enough, the most high-ranking official in MAG, General Samuel T. Williams, he viewed what was going on as no big deal. Again, he was looking at what was going on through the prism of Europe. He believed at some point the North would march south in uniforms along the road, and the North and the South would fight a fixed battle. He just saw these little guerrilla raids out in the countryside as being nothing more but a distraction. That they were trying to disrupt the training of the ARVN units. Because Williams, well, he was kind of an elitist. He didn't think that the Vietnamese peasants would have the balls to stand up against an American-trained army. He believed that they were traditional, that they were passive. But he also didn't take the time to learn Vietnamese history. Because if he did, he would have been able to see that going back to when the French first arrived, there was always nationalist movements. Granted, none of them were large, but they were always present. And the Vietnamese had for decades been willing to die for their country to get freedom. They also were trained by the OSS to fight the Japanese using guerrilla tactics of disrupting supply lines, severing lines of communication. Williams didn't even take time to learn American history in Vietnam. Why? Well, the problem with many generals, they get their rack. What I've done, and they lose sight of what could be. Now, as far as Dien, well, he just viewed what was going on as kind of like a police problem, or at most a military problem. And that ultimately, if the government passed enough laws, that they could deal with this. Because after all, these are just people running around in the rainforest. So what would he do? Well, over 1957, 1958, 1959, he approached it in two ways. On one hand, he sent out his play army. He would deploy the ARVN units to suppress it. So just like the armored cars were driving through the city, soon they began rolling out into the villages. But in those villages that he believed were completely infected, the other approach that he would use is to try to take the people away from the Viet Minh. By creating what became known as agrovilles. Agrovilles. I don't know what this guy was thinking. So you have the peasants that are out in the country villages where their ancestors have lived for hundreds of years. You're going to take these people, swoop them up from these villages, and move them into new villages, fortified military positions,
under armed guard for their safekeeping. They weren't quite concentration camps, but they were pretty damn close. Well, he literally believed if you take the peasants away from the Viet Minh, then the Viet Minh will basically die off. But the one thing he never contemplated is what would the peasants themselves say? Would you be happy to lose your home? No, you'd probably hate the government that took your home from you.
Or took you from your home. And Diem, in 1959, thought that was enough. That he had basically won. In 1959, Diem reportedly told Williams, and I quote, "The strategic battle against the VC has been won. Now remains the tactical battle, which means the complete cleaning out of many of the small centers in Viet Cong activity." Pulls the peasants out from the countryside and plans on rolling tanks out there. Well, what the heck is that going to do? That's like you going to the dentist with a little cavity, and the dentist takes out a sledgehammer and knocks your whole jaw off your face. And the worst part was the United States officials, even those in country, were listening to the Diem administration. They didn't have their own means of intel. They couldn't verify if what he was saying was actually true. Instead, they just trusted his word to be gospel. Well, with the regime being completely out of touch with his own people, it was only inevitable that there would be a big rebellion. And now that DC is involved, a rebellion that DC would have to deal with. Now, that's not to say that there were not critical reports coming. There were, but they were largely ignored. So, for example, Ambassador to South Vietnam, Elbridge Durbrow, he full out in a report to Eisenhower, he basically said the problem with South Vietnam is Diem and his family. He said, and I quote, "Diem overrides most of his ministers, reduces their authority, and assumes personal responsibility for the smallest details of government." Basically, he's micromanaging it. "He is inclined to be suspicious of others, and he lacks an understanding of basic economic principles." The ambassador is basically saying the guy's a buffoon. Other officials that were more friendly to Diem tried stressing that he should don't listen to his family as much. Or maybe he should reach out to other non-communists. So just don't focus on being with the Catholics. See if you can deal with the Buddhists or other groups. And they also stressed using less U.S. money for military technology, instead focusing on economic development. Build some roads. Build some new farms. Build opportunity, jobs for the people. All of which he ignored. Why? Well, Diem and the United States were living in different worlds. The U.S. was urging Diem to move towards a democratic, capitalistic society. But he didn't have to listen to their advice. And he didn't. Oh, wait. Part of it's missing. All right, well, that sucks. don't know what I did. Why no capitalism? Well, Diem's brother knew was suspicious of capitalism. Diem's brother knew was a fascist. He actually was enamored with Nazism. He rejected Western models. He didn't believe that individuals had rights. Instead, he believed that Vietnam should build a government similar to what the Nazis created, or Benito Mussolini had, where the central government controls everything.
So Diem sat and listened to the Americans complain, but he only did so long as that check kept coming. The money kept flowing.
But eventually, he came to believe, with like a messiah complex, that he could lead his people to a third way. Not one dependent upon the United States, but not a communist one as well. But he was a fool.
And he got punched in the mouth on November
11th, 1960. Early in the morning on November 11th, there was an attempted coup. The coup was spearheaded by Lieutenant Colonel Vong Van Dong and Colonel Nguyen Chan Thi. These two officers were the commanders of the most elite of the South Vietnam soldiers. These two, as well as the other co-conspirators, were fed up with Diem. They were fed up with Brother Nu, as well as Madam Nu. They were enraged. Because these guys had come in close contact with MAG officers. They had become friends with the American soldiers. And they were aware of what the Americans were trying to tell the administration to do. Democratize economic investment. And this small cabal said, that is the only way our country could survive. So, they decided to topple the regime. Now, the most amazing thing about this coup was that neither the CIA nor the Diem administration saw it coming. They were completely caught off guard. Because the coup was spearheaded by the paratroopers. The equivalent of the special forces in the South Vietnamese military. Since their creation, the paratroopers had been Diem's most loyal soldiers. But before sun came up on November 11th, the troopers would attack the presidential palace. Diem, Nu, Madam Nu, they were all inside. And the regime was this close from being toppled. But the problem was that the leaders were not organized. They believed that once word spread of the coup, that there would be a popular uprising and the people would join in. But they made mistakes. The biggest mistake is they didn't block off any of the major roads in the city. So as a result, loyalist troops were able to quickly get to the palace.
And then, once they heard that loyalist troops were coming, they didn't know what to do.
And if that wasn't bad enough, they decided instead of killing Diem or removing Diem, to negotiate with him.
So they started demanding reforms, but basically said, Diem, you can stay.
Well, Diem was shrewd. He knew the longer he kept them talking, the more time would go by allowing his loyal troops to arrive. And in the end, that's basically what happened by midday. There was a bloody clash. Civilians were caught in the crossfire. And an estimated 400 paratroopers and loyalists were killed. No stats were kept on how many civilians were caught in the crossfire. Because I can tell you this much. If you fire a gun, the bullet usually doesn't stop until it hits something. Which is the reason why if you pay attention to the news, and less of your little TikTok videos that you're watching, you'll hear stories about little innocent kids playing in their bedrooms and some punk-ass gangbanger shooting off some caps and a bullet coming through and killing innocent babies. Well, we know civilians died. We just don't know how many. But while the coup was crushed,
this, more than anything, was a huge ripple that would wave in D.C.
Because guess what happened a few days before the coup? What happens in the United States every single 4 years on the first Tuesday of the first full week in November? There was a newly elected president. No spoilers, though. All right, questions? All right, well, what was going on in North Vietnam? Well, in North Vietnam, things were, to say the very least, a little bit different. In 1954, where hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese were fleeing south, the majority of those people who went north were members of the Viet Minh. These men and women went north to join the regime of Ho Chi Minh. But about 15,000 cadres, individual operatives, remained in the south by orders of Hanoi. They were told to stay and bury their weapons, to blend in.
Those 15,000 would be the beginning of the Viet Cong. Stay in the south.
As far as the government, well, this should have been an easy predictor. The Democratic Republic of Vietnam, the DRV, would put in place a governmental system based on Marxist-Leninism. We already talked about Marxism. We already talked about Leninism. There would be one party, allowed in North Vietnam. The Lao Dong. The Lao Dong is the Vietnamese Communist Party.
They would control all aspects of government and society. The Lao Dong was, for all sakes and purposes, the state.
Just like in the Soviet Union, just like in the CCP.
But they also would have their own version of a dictatorship of the proletariat.
This state would be controlled by a small core known as the Politburo, the Central Command. On the far left, General Secretary Chong Chin. Next to him is Ho Chi Minh, who would be president. On Ho Chi Minh's right, Prime Minister Pham Van Dong. And on the far right, General Vo Nguyen Giap.
These four men were the state.
But what were they going to do? So Ho had been dreaming of freeing his country since the end of World War I. And now it is, fast forward 1954, he's home and he's in charge.
Well, what they would do is they would send out the most loyal communists all throughout the country, down to the local village level, and the communists would essentially oversee everything.
They controlled the schools. They controlled the markets. They controlled all industries. Everything would be state-owned. Anyone opposed to it would be banned.
Individuals would be arrested, put on trial, either imprisoned or exiled, or in some instances,
shot in the back of the head and dumped in a ditch. The focus of Lao Dong was to complete their revolution by purging North Vietnam of any non-communist ideas. Because once North Vietnam was ready, they would take over the South and complete the revolution there. So to put it another way, they weren't necessarily worried about today, they were planning for tomorrow. And what Ho envisioned as the inevitable. But Hanoi in 1954 was not ready to do so. They were hesitant to basically start taking actions against the South. For a big reason. They're in control of North Vietnam, but it's in the North where all of the big battles of the Indo-Chinese War had been fought for the previous 9 years. The region was devastated. Infrastructure, roads, bridges, canals, devastated. Agricultural production, devastated. And death. During the Indo-Chinese War, it's estimated that Vietnam Inn losses were somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000. Plus tack on another 800,000 civilians that were killed. Just killed. We're not saying wounded. 1 million people died. Well, you just can't recover. Can't snap a finger and say, okay, everything's better. Your boo-boo's gone. Plus, the people were on the brink of starvation. There was little to no food. So how can you attack the South when you can't even survive? So the Politburo repeatedly issued rulings, orders, if you will, not today, that the regime needed time. They needed to rebuild the economy. They needed to rebuild agriculture, because you cannot fight when your soldiers have no food. They also had to take control of the state, because they had no idea if there were any anti-communists in the North.
Who knows? Maybe there were counter-revolutionaries there.
They had to heal the wounds, fix the economy, build the military, and basically lock themselves in. The biggest problem they had was food. Most of the food that was produced in Indochina, when it was a colony, came from South Vietnam. Because most of the North, the terrain looks like these pictures.
Rocky mountains, valleys. There's very little actual farmable land, arable land.
I don't know exactly how many acres of farmland you need to feed, you know, per person in a population, but North Vietnam never was self-sufficient. Always had to rely upon imports from the South.
So how are you going to make food in a place that never produced food before?
Well, the only thing that the Politburo knew was communism. So they decide to implement a system based on techniques used in the Soviet Union, beginning in the 1920s, in which Moscow would put forward what are known as five-year plans.
Stalin, in particular, basically mandated. So he would tell the people that in 5 years' time, we are going to make more industry and we're going to make more food. That's the plan. They're being told to produce more.
Well, Ho did not believe he had 5 years. So Ho would actually announce they're going to do it in 3 years. That they would reorganize the economy in 3 years' time.
How would they do it? The party, Lao Dong, would take over everything.
Questions, because I think it's going to flip. FYI, that's what socialism is. when a political party controls the apparatus of government, and government controls all aspect of the economy. That's socialism. And the Lao Dong would implement a system utilized by Stalin. In Stalin's five-year plan, he basically called for the complete takeover of agriculture first. So that's what Ho Chi Minh and his cadres did. They implemented what's known as collectivization. As devised by Joseph Stalin, collectivization began with government classification of all farmers. So anyone involved in food protection is going to get put into a category. The categories ranged from the landlords, to the rich peasants, to the middle peasants, to the poor peasants, and to the landless peasants.
So basically they identify who owns what.
Once they know who owns what, the state then takes all the lands and joins it together into a single farm.
So instead of you having your own little field and your neighbor having your own little field and me having my own field, all the land is taken and merged into a single
state-owned farm, a collective. All the houses, all the tools, all the livestock, they're also taken.
It's all squished together into a single unit.
Well, this unit would be controlled by the party. And basically, the peasants became workers on state-owned land, which was once theirs. So instead of working for themselves, they now work for the state.
They live where the state tells them to live. They produce what the state tells them to produce.
And it was all done legally. The Lao Dong passed laws in 1954. The Lao Dong passed a law called the Land Reform Law Number 4.
This law basically said all of the lands held by enemies of the state could be taken.
If, however, the landlords gave the land over and it didn't have to be taken, then even the landlords would be allowed to stay. If the landlords resisted, they're gone.
So essentially, by law, they declared that private property was illegal. All private property is now public property.
Land Reform Law Number 4. And who did all the work? Well, the cadres. Trained communists that went out into the villages. They gathered the records. They found out who owned what. They also spoke to the locals. They talked about how the landlords treated the peasants and so forth. The cadres would also figure out who actually worked and who existed by living off the work of others. Once identified, the people who did not work but rather lived off the life of others were identified as Diao Chu. Stalin did the same thing. Any peasant or farmer that refused to give their lands in the Soviet Union, they were called kulaks. And by the way, 1932, 1933, Stalin unleashed a terror famine, a genocide on the Ukrainian people. Killed millions of them because they refused to cooperate with collectivization. Well, these Diachu basically saw themselves lose everything. They lost their houses. They lost their lands. All of their property was given over to the village. And oftentimes they had to wear identification. And then they were forced to be humiliated. Sometimes even put on trial. It's an actual trial of a landlord. This is one of his former peasants. Basically making claims against him. And by the way, the focus of collectivization had nothing to do with justice. It had nothing to do with land redistribution. This is a socialist tactic. They intentionally divide society between the haves and the have-nots. Because the have-nots always want what the haves have. They're jealous, they're envious. And if you can unleash the have-nots on the haves, the government's basically controlling you. But watch out. There's only a matter of time between some of the have-nots become haves and they become future targets. Give you an interesting little side note, even though hardly anyone's paying attention. They found evidence that during the Black Lives Matter riots in 2000, that the Chinese communists were actually messing with the tools that control the analytics, that control TikTok, and were intentionally showing videos that made what the government was doing seem basically manipulated and outrageous, because they wanted people marching on the streets, they wanted people protesting, because it was a presidential election. And the Chi-Coms did not want Donald Trump reelected in the 2020 presidential election. They got evidence of it, they got proof, because that's a tactic that the communists use. They stir people up. Also, why do you think so many kiddos are coming out as being LGBTQ people? Your generation, more than any other generation in the history of human society. Well, it's all a result of manipulation. Being shown images, playing upon confusion, naivete. It's all by design. And people fall for it. Well, they didn't just go after the landlords, the haves and the have-nots. They also went after anybody who was viewed as an ideological enemy. They went after the religious. They went after the Catholic priests and missionaries. They went after Buddhist monks. They went after the wealthy urban dwellers, the business owners, the middle class, the academics, the intellectuals. Why? Well, they were labeled as enemies of the state. Some, rounded up, arrested in the middle of the night. Some of them were killed, and their bodies were dumped out in the streets. Others were marched off to re-education camps. And once they were in the re-education camps, they stayed there indefinitely. No trial, no sentence, no sense of hope. Just like the Soviet Union used the gulags. Just like the Chai Coms today. Do you know that the Chinese arrested a whole group of religious people in China called the Uyghurs? They're Chinese Muslims. Well, the Chai Coms decided that there should be no Muslims in China. So they arrested them all, men, women, children, and marched them into basically concentration camps, labor camps. They're currently engaged in slave labor. Well, the Vietnamese did the same thing. Now, FYI, the impact of collectivization impacted about 4 million people out of a total population of 16. 4 million people lost everything. But in terms of what they did to the enemies of the state, estimate about 500,000 people were murdered. All within a year. Now, interestingly enough, Ho Chi Minh himself would later admit that what they did when they seized power, they had gone a little too far. And they punished people a little too severely. But what they ended up doing was crushing all resistance. Resistance was futile. Proof? In 1956, there was a mass uprising against the Lao Dong in the village of Nan Dam. Nan Dam, not too far away from Ho Chi Minh's birthplace. About 20,000 peasants would rise up in the village and all in the countryside. But within days, North Vietnamese soldiers rolled in, and somewhere between 6 and 10 million were killed, shot, dead. Because that's what always happens when communists get in power. They kill their enemy. Well, probably in part from the depopulation, because after all, if you kill off large numbers of your own people, you have less mouths to feed. Plus, once people basically stop resisting, they just kind of comply. Well, whatever the reason was by 1960, it seems that this effort of socialism actually began to gain traction. There were roughly about 40,000 collectives.
And these 40,000 collectives controlled about 90% of all farmable land in Vietnam,
all under state control. Rice production spiked, as well as production of other foods. There was corn, there were sweet potatoes, there were beans.
Once food production stabilized, the North Vietnamese would also attempt to start industrial production.
In 1960, the regime established that they expected to increase manufacturing 86%. That was the mandate. But the targets were not met. In fact, they were far from even coming close. But by the end of the three-year plan, they had about 120 factories operating.
And they were actually, for the first time in their history, producing manufactured goods at home.
Plus, they also took advantage of mineral-rich resources. Thanks to the Chinese and the Soviet assistance, by 1960, the North Vietnamese were mining coal, which is something that had never happened before. But the coal was used to fire the factories. By 1960, they also had a few factories that made machines for other factories. So they basically had the ability to expand their industrial base. They also were making bricks and other building supplies. So they didn't have to buy them, import them. They were also building their own bridges. And most importantly, thanks again to Soviet and communist, Chinese communist assistance, they also had some turbines. They started making dams to generate electricity. But don't think they were experiencing an industrial revolution. They had very few engineers. They had few technicians. All of what they accomplished was with basically foreign help. So imagine what would happen if that foreign help ended. It would come crashing down. Plus, they had no money.
So they weren't producing goods that were high quality enough that other people wanted to buy.
So because they had little cash, they couldn't buy those things that they couldn't produce. So in the end, they were stuck. Questions? But they did produce enough to revolutionize their fighting capacity. The Lao Dong began initially at a snail's pace with basically transforming the Viet Minh, which was a guerrilla-based terrorist group, into an army capable of matching the ARVN. Why? Like I said, the North believed that war was inevitable.
It wasn't if, it was when.
When would it occur? So, beginning in December 1954, they created what became known as the People's Army of North Vietnam, the PAVN. This would be a Western-style military force. They wore uniforms. They had rank. They would utilize artillery, rockets, armored vehicles. This would be the force to deal with the American-trained South Vietnamese soldiers in a Western-style battle.
But when word went to their friends,
neither Russia nor China was really enthusiastic about the North building an army or pursuing war. Why? Well, the communists were dealing with the Cold War. And both did not want Vietnam
to spark the Cold War into a hot war.
The new leader of the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev, he warned Ho about the need for a peaceful coexistence instead of instigating a war. Khrushchev urged them, look, try to use democracy. Get the South Vietnamese to want to vote and join with you, as what was decided in the Geneva Convention. Why?
Well, Khrushchev was dealing with things like the Cuban Missile Crisis and other issues.
As far as Mao Zedong, well, he basically predicted correctly that this wouldn't be a quick war. He said the only way the North can win is a long, protracted struggle. In fact, he reportedly told Ho, if 10 years is not enough, it might take 100.
Mao somewhat accurately predicted that the only way that North Vietnam could win is by virtually destroying itself
and laying waste to the South. Well, considering how weak Lao Dong was, they basically said, hey, you know, we don't want to do anything that's going to get us in too much trouble, because they needed the good stuff. They needed weapons. They needed munitions. They needed industrial and economic support. So, let's be patient. Questions?
But were there people taking action? Yes, there was.
Because surrounding Ho were die-hard revolutionaries. men who did not want to wait 10 years or 20 years or 100 years.
They believed the longer they waited, the more Diem could become entrenched. They recognized
the Diem regime was corrupt, that it was repressive, that it was not loved.
Like when Diem launched the repressions. You know, they believed that it was like a deck of cards made into a house. You push it a little bit, and it's all going to come falling down.
They also believed that those agravilles
were basically guaranteeing that the peasants in South Vietnam would be completely separate from the government. That they would become anti-government.
And if only they could be properly educated and encouraged, then they could be lethal. General Giap once described Diem's situation as such: it is a fascist, dictatorial political regime, ferociously oppressing and exploiting the people, using very barbarous means to suppress the patriotic movement. South Vietnam, by 1960, in Giap's view, had become an American colony. And as Ho Chi Minh proclaimed, the Vietnamese people should not forget that their principal enemies are the American imperialists and their agents who still occupy half the country and fervorously preparing for war.
So, not if, but when. We'll pick up on Thursday. Now, FYI. Next week is the last week before we go on spring break. You're going to get a test next week. I just haven't decided which day. So if you missed any classes, make sure you get the notes. All right?
Cool. See you on Wednesday. What?